Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Chad Buggerboo Riley.
Hut, hut, hike!
I have no idea where that came from, sorry.
Oh, I know, that's like a pet name.
It really is, but, you know, we're close. Also with us is Spencer... Alien Williams. I'm really struggling on this movie. You know what? This movie was just difficult. Okay?
Yeah, it sucked.
And that's the show, everybody.
Well, our intro is our outro. There you go. We are talking about Captive State, the film that just dropped this past weekend. And obviously, from the tone of our voices, you can tell we didn't have that great of a time. So,
spoiler alert, Spencer. Spoiler alert.
We can't wait to share it with you. So, before we jump into that, Chad, give him the good part of our show, the opening.
They say freedom is never free, and rightly so. But some things, like this podcast, actually are free because we make no money on it. The Filmlosophers podcast, as presented by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios, drops new episodes each Wednesday morning at no cost to you on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom.
We wouldn't exactly call it a hive of activity, but our Facebook page is a great place to keep buzzing about the latest and greatest movie news, which has nothing to do with this movie.
Because they look like bugs. Spoiler alert.
You can find us there at facebook.com/filmlosophers and also on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101.
Hive.
Finally, head over to filmlosophers.com when you're in the mood to eavesdrop on a good conversation or two. We have more than 150 movie reviews ready to be heard, and the library grows a little bit each week.
That's right. You know, and the great thing is not all of them are exactly just movie reviews. Some of them are us having, you know, really unique conversations about whether it's women behind the camera or if it's, you know, culture and diversity in filmmaking or even the history of certain genres. So if you just want a clear-cut history of pretty much a lot about what we love about cinema, check out our library at filmlosophers.com.
Yeah, there's a ton of good stuff there.
It really is.
And Spencer's on almost half of it.
Yeah!
That's true. But speaking of talking about good stuff, let's talk about the other side of this coin here and talk about the movie we are going to be reviewing this week, and that is Captive State. Now, here's the thing, listeners. If you haven't heard about this film, there's a reason for it. This film hadn't been widely publicized about. There wasn't a really big marketing campaign for it. And in all honesty, I could see why. This movie is not exactly like the top of the top when it comes to storytelling and whatnot. And we'll get into those reasons. We're just bubbling to tell you how much this movie bugged us. No pun intended.
Wow. There you go.
So, before we dive into this, Chad, give him that official synopsis goodness. Give him the official synopsis.
I'm like, goodness is a bit generous. Set in a Chicago neighborhood nearly a decade after an occupation by an extraterrestrial force, Captive State explores the lives on both sides of the conflict, the collaborators, and the dissidents.
Now, mind you, before anybody bites my head off, this is exactly from Focus Features Films, so that synopsis is what they said, not what I said.
Okay.
Spencer.
All right.
Written and directed by Rupert Wyatt, the film stars John Goodman, Ashton Sanders, Jonathan Majors, Machine Gun Kelly, who cares, and Vera Farmiga. Rupert Wyatt actually left the 2020 film that was supposed to have happened, Gambit, to complete this movie. Just a little side note.
That sounds like a mistake.
It was a mistake on both ends. It was a lose-lose situation, honestly.
He might have done better in
Channing
Gambit.
Channing Tatum as Gambit. Think about that.
Movie. Like, your two choices. I'll go with Gambit.
100%.
Speaking of the way we saw this film, on Rotten Tomatoes, the film holds an approval rating of 47% based on 38 reviews with an average rating of 5.45 out of 10. And if you're unsure because of the whole issue that happened with Captain Marvel and Rotten Tomatoes, also on Metacritic, The film has an average score of 49 out of 100 based
on... less than 50%, folks.
Exactly. With 15 critics indicating mixed or average reviews. So just to give you a little bit of insight on the numbers, budget for the film was 25 mil. And the opening weekend domestically, because they only released here in the States, was a whopping 3.1 mil.
Well, I mean, you can't really fault it too much for that. It didn't have a lot of publicity.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Plus, it was hard to just go see it. Like, we went the first day it was open on a Thursday, and then the next day it, like, was not in half the theaters it was in on Thursday.
I believe that. And interestingly enough, it did have a limited release for some reason. Like, it wasn't a full wide release. It isn't one of those, like, special, you know, limited releases where it's in the major markets like New York and L.A. and whatnot. This only hit like maybe 2,000-3,000 theaters total for all of the United States.
Well, I mean, that I can't fault them on their distribution strategy, because at least that means fewer people hopefully will be mad at them.
Well, we're mad at them, and that's enough for me to be mad at. So.
And we speak with a loud voice.
So like we said, we're going to be talking about this movie, Captive State. And mind you, one of the unique things about this film, and Chad had pointed it out prior to, was that, oh, look, it has John Goodman, and it has
Vera Farmiga. And Rupert Wyatt behind the scenes, who did Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
I was waiting in the beginning. I didn't do any research. You know, I don't ever do research. I don't do homework.
That's true.
I either know it coming into the episode or I don't.
That is also true.
So I did no research, but I was kind of expecting, just given the tone of the trailer and the people who were featured in it, I thought, as soon as I see a bad robot logo in front of this movie, it's instantly, this must actually be a Cloverfield verse.
Yeah.
Installment. There was no bad robot logo in the beginning, and that was my first indication that I wasn't going to like the film.
Well, there you go.
And it didn't prove me wrong.
And uniquely enough, Rupert Wyatt is no stranger to Hollywood, as he's the one who did, like Chad said, the directed Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which is the third one, not the second one. Second one's The Dawn.
Yeah, because it's the weird, yeah. And nomenclature.
Yes.
That's a word you're not going to hear in this movie.
True. Sorry, I was looking at this. Rise is actually the second one. I don't know. Who cares? And so his other directorial film was The Gambler,
Mark
Wahlberg film.
Mm-hmm.
So in all honesty, like, there's not much that builds his credibility other than he's done a few films, but I don't know, man. Like, this movie felt so out of place and out of touch with, like, you could feel that this was the hope and the, you know, endeavor of somebody who wanted to make that real mark in cinema of, like, this is going to be my artistic piece. This is going to speak on all different levels, and it's going to touch on not only the sci-fi aspect, but, like, it's going to do what Arrival did back in 2016. It's going to change lives. It's going to... Yeah, this really tried to reach for that and was nowhere in the same neighborhood. Like, not even in the same state. Sadly.
Yeah, we're all literally looking at each other across the table right now, because it's like... Even the commentary, it's like, what can we say to one another about this film?
Yeah.
Well, part of the problem is that this film leaves so little of an impression on you after you're done with it.
Mm.
Like, I woke up this morning and I was like, did I forget to watch the movie this week? What is the movie this week? Is it Captain Marvel? Wait, no, that was last week. What did we do?
So here's the thing. We saw this film on the Thursday it debuted.
Yes.
I had all four of my wisdom teeth pulled Wednesday. I was feeling okay enough to watch a film. I was, you know, on ibuprofen. I'm taking my, you know, my antibiotics. I was good. I would rather get my teeth pulled again than to watch this movie. In
all
honesty.
That's painful to hear.
Because this movie...
Painful.
At least I know where they were going, and it would have been a surprise. Oh, hey, we pulled your tooth out and accidentally found a stream of oil. Hey, you know, that's cool. I don't know. What? Whatever. You know what?
That's way more medical problems than you want.
Hey, you know what? I'm from Texas. So anyway...
How does Texas save you? It doesn't.
It explains the oil.
Because this movie just seemed to drag. Like,
and then there's Eddie in the dentist chair. I'm rich!
There you go. Just don't close your mouth. Okay. Yeah. but you have this story that just drags on and on and on. You think at any point in this film there would be some type of incident during the course of the film. Obviously, at the beginning, it sets the stage. So you know early on that the entire planet is under this quote-unquote captive state, this being taken over by this alien race who's trying to promote unity and love and peace and whatnot. The same alien spiel that tries to do, you know, that kind of stuff. It's been done. And then you get to the point to where you're like, all right, I know all that already. All right, there's aliens. They're the ones who are in charge. We're trying to live with them. What's the inciting incident? What's going to happen? And it never happened. This is like the worst part of the most boring movie. And the thing is, it shouldn't have been a boring movie. I am a huge sci-fi nerd. I was hoping this would work. I was literally like, if this turns out to be a big dud, at least let me find something redeemable in the sci-fi genre that I could say, hey, that was cool, though. I really like that.
Even yeah, the creature design or the whatever. Yeah.
Even the creature. Oh, my gosh. The creature design in this movie looked horrible. Like, the rendering was just bad. Like, he went from turning into, like, this upright porcupine to an emo kid in, like, half a second.
Yeah, that was weird.
It's like, I knew it. All emo kids are aliens. That's right. We figured it out. Like, everybody who has their hair like that. It was weird. And then the ships that would, the anthills that would fly off the earth and you know, on the upside down anthills.
Yeah, that was.
They looked like something out of, what do you call it? An asylum film. Like, it didn't
they
even.
Could
right,
do better.
Yeah. It was like a dirt clod.
And like the way the fast motion was going underneath the with the water and all that, it was like, come on, guys, you got John Goodman.
It was like a cheap version of the land speeder in Star Wars.
Oh, the land speeder effects in the first Star Wars film
were
better than that.
Yeah.
So I don't even know where to begin with this, because it's like the first thing I want to think about is what was redeemable. So hold on, let's just backtrack here, because this movie's got us all over the place. Expectations. Talking about expectations, jumping into this movie, I had zero expectations because I literally hadn't even seen a full trailer. Everything I had seen were those short teaser things.
Yeah.
And they were always attached to like the beginning or the middle of a YouTube video that I was watching. It was never the full trailer. I just always saw the thing where it's the kid standing on the rooftops, there's aliens, and John Goodman going down a hole. That's all what I saw every time. That is every trailer.
And that is the synopsis of the movie also.
So coming into this movie,
they didn't lie to you.
I was actually kind of, I wanted to have hope in what you were saying, because you had been saying it prior to, Chad, prior to when we went to this movie, that it would be great if this comes out to be like an attached film, a part of the anthology of the J.J. Abrams Cloverfield franchise.
Yeah.
And I was like,
it looked like it had a similar shaky camera, you know, filming style for some of the sequences, and obviously alien invasion and whatnot.
Yeah.
Creep you out, you know, that kind of thing. It would totally fit tonally.
Yeah.
But I'm actually really glad that it's not.
Yeah, now I am.
Oh, gosh.
So aside from like what Chad was trying to give me hope for, I really didn't have any expectations. Like, I came in fully empty-headed and empty, you know, minus four teeth and ready to watch somewhat of a decent sci-fi film. So what about you, Spence? What were some of your expectations before coming into the film?
Well, I expected John Goodman to be in it.
Oh, well.
And then besides that, I was kind of hoping, like, maybe we get, like, a little, like, 10 Cloverfield Lane type, like, of performance, which would have been kind of cool. But no, they did something much dumber than that. So that was kind of it. Like,
you can't tell, but like, or you probably could tell by his voice, but his eyes just literally dropped to the ground. He's like, but they didn't. Like, I just told him, like, you can't have no more cookies.
Here's the thing about this movie. They whiffed it so bad that we don't even know how to, like, lambast the thing.
100%.
I mean,
yeah.
It was such a just quiet let down, kind of like, oh, mm-hmm. well, that kind of wasted my time. Like, I can't even get fired up about this the way that I did about a simple favor. And y'all know, yeah, I've mentioned that so many times because I was angry with that movie for wasting my, like, 2 hours of my life.
Well, I think what the problem is that a simple favor gave you something to dislike. This True. Movie is just nothing. It's like, fluff.
It yeah. doesn't have enough to care about, which yeah. is weird because... If you were to list, like, the story beats on paper and not have to live through them, but just list them out, like, you know, an insurgent group has to try to, you know, one last attempt to incite, you know, violence that will get the oppressors to leave, yeah. and it's supposed to have societal ramifications and be a commentary on the way that we treat each other as people and all this kind of stuff that, that undoubtedly they want you to talk about in a movie review about this movie.
Yeah.
But it's, like, it's so vanilla...
Yeah,
that you're just like, I don't care. You this was a 17 minute short film mm-hmm. turned into an hour and a half feature length movie mm-hmm. with mostly like almost like a sleight of hand. Like, you're supposed to care about this,
yeah.
or, you know, this interaction or that relationship or whatever. And it's like, it's just so lazy the way that it's yeah. pasted together like a collage. Like, it's there wasn't a lot of intention, it seemed, behind it. It's just like, and then this should happen, and then that should happen, and then you get to the final scene, and, like, finally something, oh, here's a big twist. But to your point, you saw it coming, you know, for, well, basically since 5 minutes into the movie. So you've spent an hour and 22 minutes waiting for the twist that you knew was going to happen, that you were bored to tears through the rest of the movie because you just needed that twist to be retwisted and untwisted and subverted to get to a real movie that you'd want to pay to see.
Yes. Because I think the one thing to even note, because you even brought it up, and now that I think about it, it's true. Like, even the actors themselves, it felt like they were so disconnected with their roles that even the individuals who were supposed to have some type of connection, it felt very cold. Like, oh, well, this guy is somewhat of, like, some kind of father figure to this guy. And they're like, yeah, hey, so don't get hurt. Yeah, whatever, you're not my dad. You know, kind of. It's like, it seems so distant. Like,
well, and there's a lot, because they don't explain a lot of things. They're just like, you're going to pick up on it. And, yeah, I mean, sure, because you're not very intelligent with the way that you wrote it. So, yeah, we're going to pick up on it. But, like... Yeah. Overall, it just feels lazy. Like,
oh yeah, 100%.
It's not something that like, when you want people to pick up on something in a way that's meaningful, it's like a journey of discovery, right? Like, oh, Darth Vader is your father. Wow, yeah. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. I never saw that coming. But
yeah, exactly.
Here you've got just like a lack of information being shared. Yeah. You're just like sitting there like, why do I care? And oh, those two are connected. I don't think that's going to really matter a whole lot.
Yeah.
Who cares if they're connected or not?
There's no way.
They're on two different paths.
There's no weight behind this relationship for me to actually care. Like, yeah. even the actual individuals who are related in the film, they feel so, like, fake when they're on screen together. Like, it's like their relationship is so forced. Oh, hey, bro, I haven't seen you in so long. Yeah, man, we got to, you know, light a match, ignite a war, blah, blah, blah. And okay, well, you know what? Just be careful, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you're not my dad. Like, it just seems like it's always this fake, just the whole film seems cold and heartless because this whole storyline is based on going back to creating a world for humans because it was taken over by aliens. And it takes, you know, the film at the very beginning, like, lays out this really quick, you know, this real quick groundwork of, like, oh, and so after so many years, I think it's like after 10 years or...
Yeah, 9, I think.
Yeah, after some time, the aliens pretty much have taken over everything. All the governments have, you know, given up their arms and released their, you know, their armies and, you know, disbanded their military and whatnot so that the aliens could rule everybody and keep everything in peace. And whatnot. And yet, there is no reason for me to root for the humans in this storyline because nobody cares. Like, literally, nobody cares that they are in this captive state by the aliens. Like, everybody seems happier, in all honesty. Like, I don't know. That's my personal opinion. Looking at every single person that was going on and living and whatnot, it's like, oh, they're fine. They're fine. Like, I never saw once why they should take it back, take the world back from the aliens. And if this is a worldwide invasion, what is one cell going to do compared to everybody else?
They're going
to
ignite
a light war. A match, ignite a war.
Which, like, that whole idea didn't really make sense to me because, like, for some reason, this insurgents group is like, oh, we just proved that they are killable. Like, that will, like, cause everyone to rise up. And I'm like, by default, they're not machines, so they should be killable, like, as not a concept.
Not to mention, you've literally demilitarized most of the nations, and you have no idea how many more are up there compared to here.
Yeah.
You ignite your quote-unquote match, you're probably going to bring a whole bunch of gasoline down on top of your own little anthill.
Yeah, also, they have, like, more advanced technology than us, allegedly. And, like, so, like, what are you going to do? Throw sticks at their spaceships? Like,
yeah, somebody gets excited because they find a handgun, like a little revolver. And they're like, oh, this is illegal, you know, but yeah, I'm going to go out there. I'm a cap sober. I'm a cap a roach. You're not my dad. It kind of stuff. Like, and I'm like, that's a revolver. Like, at the beginning of this movie, they literally, like, breathe and turn two people into dust. Like, that's technology I don't want to mess with.
Totally.
Yeah. You can have the Earth. Cool. You want to take me off planet? Sure. I don't care.
Which I really wish they would have done more stuff like that, because that was at least interesting.
What, blowing people up into the, like, the microbial pieces of themselves?
Yeah, I don't know how they did that. That was interesting. That was, like, one of the most interesting parts of the movie.
Literally, you see this blur at the end of a tunnel, and then poof, and then everybody turns into, like, this bloody mist. It's like, what? You're not my dad.
Well, that's all in the first, like, 3.5 minutes of the movie.
It is.
It's the most, like, compelling, even in a gross way, but it's the most compelling part, and it happens, and then you're like, oh, wait, so what is the movie about now?
Yeah.
Just some guy going to work and or trying to move to another thing that doesn't have a hive underground? There was just far too little. For as much as they expanded a very short story into a long format, there was still way too little detail or story. Mm-hmm. Like, it was mostly focused on the way that a cell works. Like, not a cell in your body, but
like an insurgent cell,
right? Like, how do they operate? How do they make sure that one person can't give up the whole group? Well, because they don't know each other, you know, like, and how does that work? But, I mean, we've seen it done better.
Oh, completely.
In other stories, in other movies, in other TV shows, in other books, or, I don't know, newspaper articles that take 4 minutes to read instead of 90.
I've seen cartoons with better espionage plots than this. Like, seriously, Kids Next Door, so much more, like, spy stuff and covert operations and espionage than this kind of thing. I just...
That's real sad. I'm just sorry. I just had to throw that in there. That's really sad.
Well, and that's one of the interesting things about this film is it transitions from... This was what I was going to say before. The opening sequence looks like the opening sequence from the Cloverfield Paradox
film.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's what was... At first, I'm going to be honest, I was like... It is. It's connected. They're going to show the gas prices and all this.
They're going to show the gas prices.
But then there's, like, the whole way the opening sequence happens, and you're like, wait, what? And then, you know, and so, and then it transitions from that after, like, 10, 15 minutes of something, or not even, like, 5, 10 minutes, and it transitions into, like, this espionage film, like, focused on, like, the aliens turn totally into the background. And it's all about how these covert operations happen and kind of like what Chad was saying, how information gets passed down and how things go from person to person to person to person without actually having any link in between the people to, you know, fall back on. And it's like, okay, I mean, that was interesting, but how do the aliens fit into all this? Like, what's the whole rub? Because they do a whole montage of them passing information from one group of people to the next. For like 15 minutes.
It was too long.
It was way too long. It was like watching one of those, you know, domino things happen. That's like, Is it over yet? Just tell me what you made. Is it a dog? just let me know. I'm good. I'm gonna go home. I have to pee. You know, I didn't want to see all that. I was focused on hoping to find something redeemable about the sci-fi aspect of this film. And the moment it turned from focusing on the sci-fi portion and why they're oppressed and what the oppression looks like, because all we saw were like a flock of birds every now and then or whatever they were in the sky. They never really talked about it. And then you see them talking about, oh, that's a narc and that's somebody, don't talk to them. And, oh, secret codes and secret symbols and whatnot. And, you know, it's like, wait, this is a sci-fi film still, right? So I don't know. That was just really frustrating for me. Especially with John Goodman seeming like John Goodman usually plays a really stronger role, mm-hmm. or at least a more pronounced role. Like if you look at Cloverfield Lane, 10 Cloverfield Lane, he's honestly somebody who just is too deep into his conspiracies and he's very, very much in depth believing into his, you know, thoughts that the world is totally messed up and we can't leave and it's just dangerous going out there. And you believe him. In this, I wasn't sure what he was, whether or not if he was like a crooked cop or if he was just a cop who, or even somebody who was just like a voyeur who's like listening in on other people's conversations or stuff. And then
a lawyer.
I don't know. It was just difficult. Awesome. And then you find out he's like this actually high-ranking cop.
He's like the deputy commissioner of Chicago.
Yeah. I lost focus of this film when it started trying to create the foundation for solid characters, like, okay, this person is somebody you need to focus on, but their moral code is kind of this way, and they also have a connection with this person. This person's kind of like this, but he kind of does these things also. And, oh, you remember this woman? This woman's like this, but she's also got some other stuff on the side. Plus, while all that's happening, you also have to pay attention to this guy going to this warehouse who gets a hood on him, gets put in a van, gets taken over here, who goes and meets this person, who has to walk through this alleyway to go find this town that had been blown up by aliens prior to talk to somebody else who he hadn't seen in so many years. And that's just half of the handoff of all that stuff.
That part was very hard for me because it was just going from like person to person to person. It, like at a certain point, you went back to a group of people you'd already saw, but I didn't realize that because like they were skipping through so many people so quickly that I couldn't. I'm very bad at facial recognition without like names attached. So like it got just hard to follow at certain points in
well,
the middle.
Well, here's the thing. I the theme that I'm hearing from like the way you're describing it, it's the theme that I hear is it spends its time, too much of its time, the majority of its time on irrelevant details, right? There's a reason why a lot of these types of movies then focus on like the president of the United States or the military or what, you know, like Independence Day and whatnot. And there's a reason because they have tools and means and whatever. And here it's sort of like these people, they tried once before and they failed. And you really don't know anything about it because we kind of just like did a series of like computer notes in the opening credits to sort of catch you up to something that like just, it just throws all this information at you. That's not crucial. It doesn't help you determine what facts are relevant versus irrelevant. And then it proceeds to do things throughout the entire runtime that are like, by the end of it, you're thinking, okay, that's it? Like, why did we spend so much time with these other people?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you can argue, like, well, to establish how dangerous it is to act out or to voice your opinion or to let the little bug thing on your clavicle chirp. Like, whatever.
Everybody had cicadas in their collars.
Like, I mean, I get that you're trying to establish the stakes or whatever, but I mean, I think in the beginning, when a tarantula alien porcupine breathes down a long tunnel and vaporizes two people through a car windshield, I'm pretty sure the stakes have been established already.
Yeah,
it's so sad that that's an accurate description of what actually happened.
Of the most interesting part of the movie, which is the first 3.5 minutes.
And, I mean, so here's the thing. Last year, we kind of had a little bit of an issue with one of the films that came out because it was a little difficult to follow, and that was Kin. Kin was one of the sci-fi films we talked about. I would watch Kin 100 times over than to see this movie again. Because at least with Kin, yes, it led to a very, you know, lackluster ending of the film. But I still thought the story had an arc to it. Like, there was an actual, you know, arc of, you know, okay, this is what happens. This is an inciting incident. This is where it causes these two people to have to go on their journey. That journey causes all these adventures to happen. And then in the end, this is the culmination of that journey leading to a situation that happens in the film. You got to check out that episode. I'm not sure what episode it is, but we'll find it later. And then leading to the way the ending reveals itself and how the film resolves. And yes, we didn't give it very high marks. It was a decent film, but we felt it could have been better. That movie is Schindler's List compared to this movie. That movie is like Gone with the Wind compared to this. That movie has a storyline that I actually was like interested in seeing how it resolved. I wasn't happy with the way it resolved, but nevertheless, there was a resolution. This one, this didn't even get off the ground. Like, this whole film just stayed at ground level the entire time. And it was like, oh, we're going to lift off. You wait. Oh, we're going to lift off. Watch. And you get to the end and like, we're going to lift off. And then they jump like half a step. Like, did you see it? And it's just so, it's so heartbreaking for somebody who's a huge sci-fi fan to see the last great, and I'm going to be brutally honest, the last great sci-fi film that had ever grazed any of the silver screens this last decade, honestly, was Arrival. Arrival in 2016. Totally. That movie moved so many different critics. True people who actually love sci-fi and understand great storytelling know what that movie meant to them. And this movie, I have yet to find a film that even comes close to that type of caliber of a sci-fi film. Every year, we do reviews on sci-fi films, and I'm hoping to see what may be the next Arrival for that year. What may be the next great sci-fi film that we can begin to start comparing other sci-fi films to, you know, against. Not that there's anything wrong with Arrival. I could watch Arrival over and over and still feel the same way because it's just that moving.
But here's the thing, too. You don't even need this movie to be Arrival level.
No.
You need it to be, like, Cloverfield level, really.
Yeah.
I mean, and it doesn't even do that. I mean, the characters sort of allege that if they don't succeed with their mission to bomb the aliens this one time, then the whole Earth will be lost. Like, this is the last chance anybody has to make that sort of a statement or whatever. But it's sort of like, is that accurate? I don't really know.
Yeah.
Your plan sounds kind of goofy. And, well, doesn't even sound like anything. They don't really ever articulate the plan. They're just, like, identifying elements that maybe somebody has a plan of some sort. I mean, the closest indication is literally, like, a wood carving ink sketch on a wall that is like, oh, that sort of indicates the sort of plan that this is and the phrase that the character says with it. I act like it's too good to spoil, but it's not. It's a Trojan horse, people. A Trojan horse.
What does it say? Beware of Grecian gifts, or beware of gifts from Greeks?
Beware of Greeks bearing gifts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but like, I just, there are elements within the architecture of the story that could have been developed in a meaningful way. They weren't.
No.
Most other films, including a lot of Asylum films, by the way, that you, since you brought that up, Asylum films that are terribly, like, cheaply produced for people to laugh at on Sci-Fi Channel, but there are Asylum films that are better made.
There are.
At least in terms of, like, getting you to care about the characters and be interested in the flow of the story. This one, it's sort of like, I'm not really sure why we're following that character so much. And then, like, by the end, where you end up with the main character, with what is revealed about, like, his before he was born and some of the other characters, and, like, he's the one that's left. And you're like, but I don't know why it matters. You haven't empowered him to do anything.
Yeah.
He runs around. And he, like,
he ends up getting sick.
Kind of helps people and mostly doesn't. And then is, like, leveraged by somebody for reasons unknown. Mm-hmm. And you're like, maybe there'll be a reason that comes to light. No. No, like, there's nothing. It's like, why did it have to be him? Why did it have to be them? Because they had a dinner party together in somebody's backyard?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just very unfulfilling.
Quick note. We reviewed Arrival in less than 37, and then we reviewed Kin in less than...
129.
129. So, just in case you're playing at home. But, yeah, I mean, it's sad to say that, like, there's not much we can actually talk about the film, not because we don't want to spoil it for you, but because we just didn't really care. Like, at the end of the film, I literally got up and said, well, that's time I can't get back. Like, because honestly, that story maybe could have been fleshed out a bit better and actually better translated in book form, like in written form. Like, maybe it would have been better that way, written there, and then kind of given time for people to ruminate on that, allow it to become something bigger, much like, and I know I've already said it overly several times, but like much like Arrival. Arrival started out as a short story, a novella, and somebody took it and created that. And that's how usually most of these sci-fi films start out. Like, it's a treatment of some sorts, or it's a short story, or it's some type of script that's been on the back burner for so long. Nevertheless, it's a film that starts out with some type of source material that grows into something that people can truly love. And this film totally removes the element of love out of the entire equation and gives you ultimately a film that goes nowhere, really. Like, I don't care how much they're wanting to incite a war, you know, to create this rebellion, but I personally didn't care enough to even want to see the rebellion happen. I think the most exciting part was their slogan, you know, ignite a match, you know, or light a match, ignite a war or something. Something like that. Something ridiculous.
Yeah, but even that, it's like, I don't know. Like,
maybe war is a brand of candles out there. I don't know.
It's just, it's one of those, like, confounding experiences, because you can see that there are elements in here that should have worked better than they do. So, you know, you're looking at it like, oh, well, they had the puzzle pieces to put together an interesting picture, but they really just messed it up. Like, those pieces that they stuck together, it's like when you get two pieces that look like they go together and then they don't, and you're like cramming them because you're mm-hmm. just so tired of looking, that you just like force it, and then you end up with something that like has all the wrong angles, doesn't work,
yep,
and like doesn't even use half of the pieces in the box that you had to work with to make it complete. That's the way I feel about this movie. It's like the pieces are there. You can see elements that would have been intriguing if they were utilized in a different way, and they just weren't.
Yeah, like it's not like this film, this story couldn't have been built better, because it has great elements of something that could have been better. In all honesty, I in the middle of the film, I turned towards Spencer and I said, this feels like a BBC series. Not to knock it, but because of how much they spent so much time building and creating this foundation for this underworld of insurgents and rebels who use this complicated way of getting information out to people. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that seemed like, you know, an episode of like Luther or even Sherlock Holmes, like the complicated aspect of it, the way it, you know, expands on it a little bit and all that. Like, this could have been broken down and turned into some kind of miniseries. The idea that you could put everything into this certain amount of time and hope that it gets translated well enough so that people can actually care about how this is going to end. Because in all honesty, if you look at some of the sci-fi TV series that are out there, like V's one of them, where, you know, you have this alien race that takes over the world and is promoting unity and whatnot, and actually they have nefarious intentions. There was a more recent remake of it, according, you know, on EBC, as well as this original back in the 70s. But all in all, it's the same premise as this, and it was successful. The original, not the remake. The remake kind of bombed.
Well,
and
even
season.
Something like, a lot of this story is actually about people not getting along with other people. Like, the veneer of the story is these alien oppressors come in and take over, and now we have to take the power back.
Yeah.
It doesn't even tiptoe very close to that. Nope. It pretends like it's going to, but most of what it's trying to do is talk about the tensions between humans and other humans.
Yeah.
And who are the collaborators and who are the insurgents or whatever, what yeah. have you. But you're not given very clear definitions about what qualifies you for one category or the other.
Yeah.
And you're not given a lot of reason to care about the human characters one way or the other. You're like, I don't know, you're kind of all a little boring and, like, I don't know, it seems a little harsh, but...
No, it's
like,
true.
Like, you're not compelling yet. Like, you're not a fully formed character yet. You're given, like... You know, when somebody's sitting down to write a story and they're like, I'm going to give them a troubled past and I'm going to give them like a
like
bad
why?
Relationship with the one who's not his father or whatever. Like, but it's like, but you didn't do anything actually with actual depth.
Yeah.
And you didn't even act like you were interested in shaping the character. So, of course, the performer has no subtext to really work off of.
Yeah.
Nor did you force them to. And so what you get is just a very shallow presentation.
And that's one of the things that kind of bugs me the most about this movie.
You said bugs.
Hey. is that I think the biggest problem I have with this film is it tries to create this myriad of connections at the very end of the film with this ridiculous action where... So, spoiler alert, which I really don't think you're going to go and try to see this movie after this review.
Don't try.
So, we're just going to tell you how the ending goes. John Goodman, who happens to be the big cop in this entire film, trying to crack down on everything. Uh-oh, wait, I didn't expect. John Goodman's been in on it the whole time.
What?
He's the end game?
I'm shocked.
Oh, no. So, John Goodman gives this SIM card to this kid who's been pretty much supposed to be the focus, but then hasn't been the focus. He's like, he that was weird. Like the POV character from the in the beginning of the film, but then he goes and gets stuck in some subway and we don't see him for like a good third of the film. And he gives him this and then he leaves him and whatnot, and he finds out, like, oh, they were all friends back before the you know, invasion, and they all knew each other, and, you know, they were, you know, she was the hooker was a history teacher. Oh no. And like, it was like, why? Like, it's similar in the sense of kin, where it's like, okay, we're going to throw all this together, and then we're going to place so much importance on this character and whatnot and on this relationship that you're going to want to come back for more. This is like, oh, and everything you've just seen for the last hour and a half, this is why it was all important. This is why you should have invested into it, because this is what happens, and these are the real people, and, you know, all these people, you know, they knew your parents, and they cared about you, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, that was Bootsy.
Like, you know...
And I said Bootsy.
In life, it is possible to meet new people. Like, you don't have to... You don't have to have, like, a backstory with absolutely everyone. Oh, the only reason I'm here is because I knew her from the barbecue. And that's why we trust each other to take down light matches, people! Like, that... No, like... Like, if you're starting an insurgency, you have to deal with people you may not know. Like, I feel like this is
light
kind of
matches,
basic.
People. Well, and the people that they choose for this thing. I mean, I'm like,
they're idiots.
Part of it's interesting because it's like, I don't know, the scared guy with the dog, and the dog is out there barking as a signaler. Okay, fine. But like, I don't know, give me a Hell's Angel biker or something. Mm-hmm. Like, give me something that, like, I don't know. It makes more sense.
Yeah.
Because
there are all these like
a
random
lot of this
people.
Just didn't really make a lot of sense. Sort of like, wait a minute, your plan is to take Jell-O, clear Jell-O,
explosive
sneak it
clear
onto
Jell-O.
Some guy's shoulder right before he goes. And it's got like a timer of 30 seconds after you double tap it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, so then that makes it a suicide mission.
It's like,
because you can't get...
Why did that guy who pat me on the back running so fast in the other direction?
Right.
I don't know.
Like, that means why use him... like, you need to have somebody close enough to him. Like, it's a suicide mission.
Yeah,
you can't get away in 30 seconds. You can't. It's supposedly so powerful, right? This weird little gelatinous grenade thing. Bug, blow up, whatever it is. And... So, like, but they don't treat it like a suicide mission. They're like, and then everybody scatter and run, and you will all get caught because it didn't work right. Well, duh, it didn't work right. It was the dumbest plan in any of these kinds of movies.
Yeah.
Also, like, the thing about this exploding Jell-O, like, when...
Is that where we're going with exploding Jell-O?
It basically
okay,
was.
Cool, cool,
it
cool.
looked like it. It did. Is that, you know, it blended in with whatever someone was wearing. But the thing about that is, it only blends in. It doesn't become weightless. Like, if something's on your back, you're probably going to notice it.
Because the guy who's playing with it and trying to figure it out while it's camouflage is, like, moving it all the time. And I'm like, oh, okay. So he feels it.
Yeah.
So you're thinking about this guy who's walking down about to meet somebody, and he's got this bump. He's like, huh, my shoulder feels about a couple pounds heavier. Maybe just
not to mention they give, like, the most recognizable insurgent guy the exploding jello to somehow transfer to the highly public official.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
his face is spray painted on walls.
Yeah, like, nothing about that plan made any sense. It deserved to fail.
All right, so wrapping this up, because honestly, I don't think there's much more we can say.
We've
about
gone
this.
Too no, long we're done. Already.
That was too much.
Let's go ahead and go around the table and see how this film passes or fails. I said it, and I'm like, as I'm saying it, I'm like, yeah, I know the answer to that already, but they may not. So let's tell the listeners, does the film pass or fail for you, and how many monocles? And let's go ahead and start with Spencer.
Fail, too. That's it.
Wow.
You give it two monocles.
Yeah.
That's too kind. The film fails for me. I just did not enjoy the story. It went nowhere. It didn't even follow any basic law of cinematography in terms of, like, your three-act story. There was no focus of this film for me to be invested enough into the character. So I just honestly did not care how the film was going to end. Even if it was John Goodman. He died in Roseanne the first time. He'll die in this film the second time. So
wow.
So the film fails for me, and I am probably going to give it one monocle because I think the soundtrack sounds really good, although you don't really notice it because you're watching the garbage that's on screen. But as I was trailing through to hear soundtrack pieces for this podcast, I was like, oh, this sounds really good. Oh, that sounds really nice. Why was that on in the movie? So nevertheless, it gets one monocle. It fails for me, and yeah. Chad?
I like your little hiccup at the end. And yeah. I don't even know. I'm too bored to rank this thing. I'd fail and maybe like a quarter of a monocle.
Quarter.
I thought that the way that they got rid of the parents in the beginning was interesting. Disgusting, but interesting.
That was the only interesting.
That's the best part of the movie.
Quarter monocle.
Quarter monocle.
There you go.
Quarter.
That's like a sliver in the eye is what he's saying.
Yeah, he like that's real dangerous.
It is really dangerous. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Film Philosophers. Remember, you can chime in on this conversation at any point on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmphilosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/philosophy101. Let us know, are you going to check out this film? Are you going to listen to anything we tell you and not watch this film? Or are you just going to go and spend the night over Spencer's house? He's actually going to watch a movie later. You should go check him out. So let us know on our Facebook and Twitter page. Also, to let you know, we got a couple of upcoming weekend releases. We got Hotel Mumbai, which is actually a decent film. I saw the trailer a little bit ago, so it looks pretty good. And also Jordan Peele's Us. We are excited to see that film. And nevertheless, I guess we can just say it now. This is what we're going to be reviewing next week. So stick around. But in terms of sticking around, we also got a special edition. We haven't done it in a while, but we're going to be doing an extra credit episode talking about, because after all this negative talk, we need to do a little positive discussion. And let's talk about all things in terms of the state of Marvel right now and where we're at cinematically. So if you want to know a little bit about that and our opinions and hear about why Spencer just completely did not like Captain Marvel, stick around in the extra credit episode and we'll talk about that, all right?
All right, like the Captain Marvel review already came out. Like,
yeah,
people
we're,
know.
We're going to get into the nitty gritty, Spence. In the nitty gritty.
Oh my gosh.
Strike a match. Ignite a war. You're not my dad. So, but like I said, that wraps up another awesome episode. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, we can't get out of this room sooner. I'm Eddie.
Bye.
Spence.
Class dismissed.